my upcoming guest is a wonderful comedian. She's Canadian. She has a new show that debuted recently called A Bit More Than a Rough Patch. And I believe you are going to find her words of wisdom absolutely bang on. I can't wait to introduce you.
Suicide Zen Forgiveness, the pod that shares the stories of those affected by suicide. Lost a loved one? Attempted it yourself? Come listen in with your host, Elaine Lindsay. Please note, the Suicide Zen Forgiveness podcast is for education only. Some of this subject matter could be triggering. For those of you that are either grieving or having mental health problems, please call your local suicide hotline or mental health office if you need immediate help. And now, here's your host, Elaine Lindsay.
I'm really excited to bring you an incredible guest today. She's a comedian. For the past 15 years, Susan Stewart's been entertaining and inspiring audiences across North America. Susan's best known for her ability to make people laugh while helping them to meet their challenges with a sense of humor. Susan is the author of three books, including her latest title, You Gotta Laugh, Wit and Wisdom About Not Taking Life or Yourself Too Seriously. Susan's podcast, Still a Hot Mess, and her comedy album, Relentless, are available on iTunes and Spotify. You can learn more about Susan on her website, and all of the important links are below. Without further ado, let's talk to Susan. Well, it's really super to be here with Susan Stewart. Thank you so much for joining me. I just want to say to the audience that I took Susan by surprise because I asked about a show she did in 2012 or 2013. And yes, and I'll tell you right off the bat before we do anything else, she's hilarious. So it's not going to be a downbeat show at all, which sometimes happens here. You gotta be able to laugh at yourself. I say that all the time. So without further ado, Susan, I'm just going to let you take the mic, start wherever you want, and we'll take a conversation from there.
All right. Thanks so much, Elaine, for having me on the show. And I don't feel any pressure whatsoever to be funny in light of that introduction. Okay. So no pressure felt whatsoever. Yeah, I'm honored to be your guest. And today we're talking about a topic near and dear to my heart, which is mental health. And so I've had my struggles with mental health over the years. About 20 years ago, it actually led me to quitting comedy. And that was my first big hurdle. I started out in stand-up out in Toronto. I was working all the clubs. Everything was fine at first. And then about 3 years into my comedy career, I fell into a clinical depression, battled a lot of anxiety, panic attacks, insomnia, all that kind of stuff. And quitting comedy is harrowing and hard on the best of occasions, right? It's hard. It's tough to do when you're feeling good. So when I was struggling to get out of bed in the morning and put one foot in front of the other, it seemed impossible. So I made the decision to quit. So there was a gap of time in my comedy career where I wasn't doing comedy because I was recovering from a pretty severe battle with mental health issues.
Something that I think we both know, there are a lot of comedians that fall into depression and deal with anxiety and panic attacks. And I could name five, like, just as we sit here.
Yeah. You know, I think there's a psychology behind it for sure.
Yeah.
I think there's a mindset, there's a personality that is really driven for approval and attention. but in the purest sense, but definitely wanting that approval from others, because deep down there are underlying issues. And I think we're also very driven to see the humor in the dark places. I think inherently, just naturally, we pick that up. We choose that as a way of coping early on in life. And then we think, hey, I'm pretty good at this. I think I'm going to stand on stage with a microphone and do this professionally. So there's a lot going on, Elaine. That's what we'll say. There's a lot going on with that, but you're right. You're right.
I want people to get an understanding, because something that I find really important about comedy and about comedians, it seems that some of them that struggle the worst understand that you have to start by being able to laugh at yourself. I believe that's the greatest skill you can have, is being able to see your own flaws and foibles and outwardly not make a big deal of them.
Yeah, I think it's a major part of resilience, is just not taking yourself too seriously. We're going to mess up. We're going to have hard times. We're going to face adversity. And so seeing any shred of humor in it, seeing what's funny about it, is a way to get back up after life knocks you down.
Yes.
And I think we, as the wounded comedians, just, we know that's a way back to the light. And so we practice it a lot, and really trying to see what's humorous about our own flaws.
Well, it
our own imperfections. Yeah.
It makes it easier for others.
I think that's why you see a lot of comedians doing what's called self-deprecating humor.
Yeah.
But I think that's also helping people to feel less alone and struggle. I think it's important to share your missteps and your struggles, because then that can help the audience feel validated. Like I said, feel less alone in it. So I think it can be very healing, and comedy is very healing.
Oh, I totally agree. And they've proven that laughter can alleviate pain.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So that gets down to physiology, right? And we actually release good feeling chemicals like serotonin that boost our mood, and you're right, decrease pain, physical pain. Oh, yeah. It's a wonder drug. It's a free wonder drug.
So I may have made it a little on the spot in my introduction, but that makes you a walking, talking wonder drug.
Taken small dosages, by the way. All right. Definitely watch your dosages. Yeah, I do think of myself as some kind of healer when I'm on stage. She's a Stuart medicine woman, but I'm not sure if it's like that. But when I get those folks laughing, and we're laughing especially about maybe something tough like mental health, I think of it just as such a, I think, profound experience with stress relief. You can just feel like the tension being released. And that's a fact. Laughter releases tension.
And yeah, so, in your rooms, you must feel like the energy is raised because the tension is lowered.
You got it. You got it. So I think that's an important thing to remember in our lives, when things get tense, as they do, that there's a way to release that tension quite immediately. I know it's tough to see what's funny right in the moment when things are really hard, but the sooner you can get there, the better, for sure.
Absolutely. I think, not to beat a dead horse here, but I really do think that doesn't matter what's going on, some form of laughter can completely change the situation. My sister and I had a very fractious relationship for most of our lives. We were 5 years apart. And I don't know why this started. Nobody does. But she'd be driving me nuts. We'd be fighting. My parents would be getting upset. And I'd suddenly turn around and go, "Fire truck." And she would laugh like a fiend. And my sister had this laugh that just took on the world. She stopped the Blue Man Group in a concert at the NAC because she was laughing so hard. The guys are like, "Ooh, what is that?" One guy's pointing at her, because it was just such a 100% full body laugh. And it just made me appreciate that no matter what was going on, when you shook your head a little and realized you're getting a bit carried away, if you could turn it into something humorous, you can really save a situation.
Yeah, say you're having a disagreement with your partner, right? Things are getting tense there. If you can somehow make your partner laugh, say something, lighten the mood, inject it with some kind of some humor, I think that's a gateway to resolution. I don't know. I think humor minimizes situations. It doesn't diminish, but I think things just seem a little bit more manageable when you can get laughing about it.
Yeah, I think a little more perspective, maybe.
Exactly. I find it a very healthy perspective.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than getting up in your head and catastrophizing, it's a great outlook to have on things.
Absolutely.
Keeps you grounded.
Yeah, yeah. And that is definitely important. But I know that in the last, I want to say, few years, you came to another crisis.
Yeah, I did. It was early 2023 when I started to feel those classic symptoms of depression and anxiety. And there were some things that I'm not proud of that intensified my experience with both of those things. I was very resistant to medication, despite medication being very helpful for me. Years prior when I quit comedy, I made a full recovery thanks to medication. This time I wasn't interested. I was not interested in getting help with my therapist. I don't know. I felt a lot of shame around it. And I think there's a lot to do with the fact that I am a speaker. Like I'm a motivational speaker, as they call it. I've written 3 self-help books. So I think I had a lot of personal stigma going on. Hey, I'm not going to be that self-help author, motivational speaker on anti-anxiety, antidepressant medication. So yeah, there was like, I was in denial. Like I was just couldn't believe that I was back in that same spot I had been years ago. There was delusion, like, I can handle it myself. And then there was stigma. And so it just kept on increasing my suffering. And then I started to lose hope. And when I say I lost hope, I meant I started to believe that things were never going to get better, that I was going to feel like this and be like this for the rest of my life. And when I was trapped in that story, thinking that my condition was permanent, I reached the point of what's considered to be a mental health crisis. Yeah. And one point I had a bottle of sleeping pills from a bout of insomnia that I had, and I took the whole bottle. No. Someone was found me rather quickly and I was taken to the hospital, full recovery. Here I am. See, the story has a happy ending. I am still here. But yeah, it was the person who did that day is not really me. That's just a person who was trapped in this story that things were just going to be like this forever. And so anyway, I'm on the other side of it. I've learned a lot of hard lessons. I'm on my medication. I'm seeing my therapist regularly. I'm picking up the pieces. But yeah, it's just so important to really honor the place of medication. There's just a point when the chemicals in your brain are so out of balance that all the self-help in the world isn't going to be enough to get you back on track.
And we have these little voices in our head. Okay, I call it the itty bitty shitty committee.
That's a good name. I like that.
Thank you. Not mine. Somebody else gave it to me. I won't claim to be brilliant there. It's important to remember that they're there, because when we do get to those places, and I know exactly what you're talking about, I've suffered from ideation since I was a kid. Mm. Just didn't know that it had a handle. Okay. And getting to those low places, if you understand that not everything that runs through your head is real, not all those voices actually mean something. It's something I think we should be teaching in school.
Oh, I so agree. Just because you think something doesn't mean it's true.
Yes. And yeah. I have a friend, he's been on the show. His name's Rex Sykes. He's written a book, Live the Life You Want. And it's brilliant. But the whole concept for him is we're taught to drive a car and a bicycle and how to train your dog. And nobody teaches us how to deal with our brain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's the best computer on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And you get it, and it's basically, I don't know, bargain basement at Feline's. Here you go. Have fun. You just get this brain, and there's no instructions. There's nothing. I'm making light of it, but the fact is, we are having problems with children as young as single digits, taking their lives.
Mm.
And it doesn't make sense to me. Because if we can manage to get help, if there's medication that can help, if there's therapy that can help, if that child knew that all that crap that was going on in there wasn't theirs, it wasn't real, they might have told someone. And if we weren't so damn silent and ashamed and worried about the stigma people put on everything, then we could put this out in the open and have conversation. People should be conversing around the dinner table with their children, not just what'd you do in the playground, who annoyed you. It's what kind of thoughts are you having today?
Yeah, what are you telling yourself?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You are preaching to the choir here. I totally agree. And I needed to hear more of that when I was, you know, in the midst of my illness. I just had so many cognitive distortions.
Yeah.
That's what I call them. Just all this, what I call negative fortune telling. I was just predicting. I was predicting these terrible things and believing them. So I just, if I could go back and do it all over again, I would have gotten my rear end to the doctor and I would have been very honest with my symptoms, therefore likely getting the medication that I needed. And gotten the support of my therapist, who could then challenge all of these stories I was caught up in, right? We would have unpacked all of that together, and she would have helped me just gain clarity. You don't have to be super positive, maybe, if you're dealing with mental illness, but at least see clearly. The fact of the matter is, nothing stays the same. You will eventually feel better. Nothing stays the same in this life. No.
Absolutely not. That's such a good point. And I think by us opening up, everybody opening up and talking openly about all the things that are still taboo in our society, we're going to make life simpler for everybody, because I don't know anybody that doesn't have an itty bitty shitty committee. Some are much more populated than others.
Right. Yes. Yes. they're called comedians. But yeah, we've all got the inner critic and probably some sort of committee, as you say. They've probably got a team behind them. But yeah, that's just our ego. And that's just our ego trying to protect us. But it's going to feed us all lies to keep us on our toes. But
well,
just
that's
to know.
Just it, though, Susan. Mm-hmm. It's not to keep us on our toes, it's to keep status quo.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. And that's what we really don't want. Because that's when you can go down those rabbit holes.
Yeah. Yeah, the inner critic and its company likes to have us believe that we're not good enough. We're not doing enough.
Yeah.
There's not enough to go around. All that kind of thing. That
absolutely.
And that it keeps us in that state of lack. And it's all just a bunch of crap. It's just all made up. It's just that voice that we just... We can't really get rid of the voice. That is a bit of an illusion. That's a lofty goal that I think that can't be achieved. But we can tell that voice to sit down, right?
Yeah. And we can tell it that we're taking over.
That's right. Yeah.
No, we're in charge here. But if you don't know that's their aim and that they're there and that those voices... They don't have your best interests at heart.
No.
Absolutely not. And Henry Ford said, if you think you're right or you think you're wrong, I'm paraphrasing, you are. But to take that one step further, if you assume people don't like you, or you assume that people talk behind your back or what have you, that will become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And the more we do it to ourselves, but again, nobody talks about this. People are just now starting to say, you know what? My head in there, oh my God, hamsters can't keep up with that wheel. It's pretty bad. And it takes, they've always said it takes a village to raise a kid. I think it takes a village to keep us going. You can't just raise the kid and shove it off to do whatever. We have insecurities. Even those among us who are super positive and super confident, everybody has a moment where nobody's good at every single thing. And those little doubts allow those thoughts to creep in. And I think it's wonderful that you get up on stage and you take the time to allow people to release the endorphins and get that feel-good time. Because for some people, that's the only feel-good time they're going to get.
Yeah, when people come up to me after the show and they say, I haven't laughed like that in so long. And there's nothing better to hear. It's so meaningful. That's what infuses meaning into my comedy. And so now, speaking of meaning into my comedy, I've got this new show that is actually all about mental health. And so I'm doing my best to lessen the stigma.
Yes.
Concerning mostly about anxiety and depression, because that's what's near and dear to my heart. But yeah, talking about what happens in our monkey mind, right? What goes on in an anxious head? And with the show, we're going to see the humor in it. We're going to laugh about it, because I do think there's something funny about everything, even the really tough stuff like anxiety. And by laughing at it and talking about it in the show, we can minimize its stigma. I don't know if I can get rid of it entirely by doing one show, but we can do our best to shine a light on it and help people again just feel less alone in this experience and go, oh, look at all these people laughing at this. This is, geez, yeah. This is relatable to all these people. I think it's an important show where I tell my story and say, yeah, it happened to me. But also, here's what I think is funny about it. We got lots of fun jokes about being in therapy and stuff like that too. I think when we can see the humor in our struggles, that helps us to move through them and get to the other side.
Yeah. So
at the beginning of the show, I actually stand there and I say, I want to give you all permission to laugh tonight. Okay? Mental health is a serious topic, but it's important not to take it too seriously. I really think it's important for us to have a laugh at this stuff too. I'm not making fun of it. I'm not saying that this is really a funny experience, but I think there is. I think there's some humor there. So yeah, that's what I'm really focusing my attention on now is this new show.
And the new show is a bit more than a rough patch.
A bit more than a rough patch. A comedy show about taking mental health seriously.
Seriously. I love that.
Yeah, thank you. That just came to me one day. Now, the title comes from a moment that I had when I was in a recovery treatment program after my attempt. I went to the Homewood Health Center in Guelph.
Yes.
And I went through a 9-week recovery treatment program that focused on trauma, actually. Anyway, while I was at Homewood, I was FaceTiming with my partner and we got talking about my mental health crisis. And I said, yeah, it was a bit of a rough patch. And then my partner, there was just silence. Like stunned and wide-eyed. She said, Susan, what the hell did you just call it? Let's be very clear. It was a bit more than a rough patch. Fair. Fair. Okay, fair. So that's where the title comes from. Okay. See, there I was minimizing it. I was still struggling with owning it.
Well, we do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bit of a rough patch.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you what a rough patch is. That's not it. But anyway, so I wanted to pick some kind of fun title so I could convey to the audience that it's going to be fun. It's about mental health, but it's fun.
Good. Now, I think we are, at this point, past the date of you doing the show. These are the first two shows you're doing?
Yeah, I debuted the show here in Brantford, Ontario.
Okay.
My new home here. I lived in Toronto for 25 years and then moved to Brantford.
It was to raise money for the Brantford Memorial Hospital?
So yeah, the Brantford Hospital Mental Health Unit. I stayed in the mental health unit, Memorial, thankfully not, but the mental health unit is where I recovered from my attempt. I was there for 3 weeks.
Wow.
And once I was properly medicated and I felt like myself again, I thought, I'm going to write a show and then all the money is going to go back to that mental health unit that saved me. So that was very fulfilling to do that. And so we raised a lot of money and we were able to give back to the hospital foundation. And some of the nurses from the mental health unit came to see the show.
Good, good.
Pretty cool.
They definitely need to laugh.
Exactly, exactly. Anyone in healthcare needs a good laugh.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is this going to, you going to tour with this show?
I want to take this show. First, I want to take it around Ontario. Then I want to get to other provinces. So I'm going to see if I can partner up with the Canadian Mental Health Association.
Yes.
See what we can do, at least provincially right now, and then see what we can do after. But Ontario is definitely where I want to.
Absolutely.
Get around. Yep.
I think that's wonderful. Yeah. And
so that's the next step.
Yeah, I see the need being for you to take the show everywhere.
Yeah. I really want to help as much as I can. I think there's just so many lessons that I learned the hard way and that led to the point of crisis. I could have avoided it. I could have. So I want the audience to just leave acutely aware of the major things that happened.
Yeah. Here's
where things went a little wrong.
And hopefully
to help people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Prevent that from happening.
Understanding to really pay attention when you start minimizing things.
Yeah.
And when you start thinking, it's just me. It's me against the world. There's no one else. There's no one outside of me. I think for me, that was always the thinking I had to fight my own battles and I had to protect everybody around me because I don't know, I'm some dangerous thing.
I know, you feel like the monster on the hill, to quote Taylor Swift. But anyway, I did not tell anyone that I was in crisis. There I was.
Nope.
Like, suffering in silence.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of really great people in my life. Yeah. And I didn't tell anyone.
And, okay, that's the sad thing, Susan.
Yeah.
That's what happens. And all the people around you, you become so good at acting that the people around you, most of them can't see what you're trying to cover.
Mm-hmm.
Because you become very good at it when you've had to do it over a lifetime.
Yeah. Yep. I went to theater school and everything. So I'm a.
There you go. So trained. You're even better. All
trained actor. So yeah. Definitely was able to put on a pretty good show. Oh dear.
So let's take a total offside then. When you were a kid, what did you want? What's the first thing you wanted to be when you grew up?
A star. I literally said that to my mom and dad. I want to be a star. It's so funny. It's just the things we say when we're kids, eh? It's that little truth.
Yeah.
Ends up to be quite long lasting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I guess that, I don't know, something happens when you're a kid that you gain applause or all the adults turn to you. And some people will just enjoy it and move on. And some of us, that is, it's like, oh,
mm-hmm.
The nectar of the gods. I need that. And I, for one, am very glad that you did it. because I can honestly say you are hilarious. And I'm a big, I've always believed that comedy was so useful in every situation. And I'm blessed to have a lot of friends that are comedians. And it's just, to me, it is one of the best callings in the world, because you are addressing things that other people have been unable to put out there.
Yeah, somebody once said to me, as a comedian, you tell the truth.
Yeah.
And I said, that's a great way of putting it, right? We got that old saying, it's funny because it's true. Yeah, we tell the truth.
Yep.
And that can be so liberating for an audience. Go,
oh my God, yeah.
I'm so glad she's saying this right now. That's exactly how I feel. Or I've had that exact experience. Incredibly validating. So truth tellers.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Important job.
I think so. And the way that comedy is evolving now is that most shows that you see, say on Netflix, these comedy specials, or if you go and see them live, there's some kind of meaning to every show. Comedy is crossroads with keynote speaking now, and that you'll find that every comedian with their show has a message.
Yes.
It's a really cool thing that's happened, I would say, over the last 2 or 3 years. It's quite new, actually. But you're hard-pressed to find a comedy show that doesn't have meaning to it now. They've got something to say.
Yeah.
And that's cool. I think that's really cool that comedians are using their platform and
sharing their own truth. I hadn't thought of that.
Yep. It's happening.
It's absolutely true.
Very consistently now.
Yeah.
And yeah, my show about mental health is no different. There's lots of laughs, but there's a serious point to the show.
An important message.
Yeah. You got it.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. We're going to take this through Ontario, and then you're going to stretch it through Canada. Where's the next place you want to go?
I'm a little scared of the United States of America, but I think it would be pretty cool to get down there. And
I think it would be important.
And break down some barriers there. I think I would select my states very carefully, but anywho, but yeah. Certainly, goodness, it does. Yeah, I could take this probably globally because
where I was going. Yeah,
this topic is universal.
Absolutely.
But we'll start with Ontario and see how we go. But yeah, might as well dream big, right? Might as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And my home in the UK has terrible problems as well. If you go to any country in the UAE. Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter, Africa, Australia, New Zealand, wherever you go, they're all having problems because I think part of it is how quickly everything around us is evolving. And COVID was like the giant break in the, somebody put the brakes on and everything just ceased to move. And I think people are just coming out of it now. As much as we're moving out of it for a while, people aren't aware. They're becoming aware of some of the internal angst, if you will, that they haven't shaken off.
Mm. I think there's PTSD for sure. It was a very traumatic event. And we are going to be healing from that for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who didn't deal with mental health issues through the pandemic? I mean, I think everybody got a piece of depression.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
There's no one that can say, oh, I don't get it now. No, you get it now, for sure.
Oh, yeah, you have to. Nights in cities all around us, people outside banging pots.
Exactly.
So think about that. Now, that was really wonderful that we cared enough about others, but we're now on the tail end of that, and there's all this pent-up anger and impatience, and you find yourself just not having the patience you used to, and I have had to stop myself and think, whoa, okay, where the hell is that coming from? just the craziest little things.
It's like we're all in menopause.
Yeah.
We are all hormonally imbalanced now.
Been there, done that.
And erratic. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Something. I know.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. It can be really crazy. And like the episodes on planes, and it's just really? People, do you not realize you're up in a tin can?
Yeah.
In 40, 50,000 feet up there? There's no going back. You shoved somebody out a window. There's no going back from that.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's highly unstable. Yes.
Yeah.
But you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. It's at a frenzy at this point. Like, what happened to, just having patience. Just patience.
Yeah. Give other people a little grace.
Exactly. Give each other some grace.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I, for one, I'm the first one that has to work on it because I was always impatient. Because I do things really quickly, so I figure everybody else should too. And that's a quirk I've always had to deal with, so I've always been aware of it. And just seeing how many more people are in that headspace is like, oh my God. And I realized it had to be, we've all been put through this weird kind of stuck in little compartments and not being able to see the rest of the world. I don't know that anybody's ever had to do that for that extended period of time. Our doctor left. We got home on the 11th of March and they locked down the world on the 13th. Our doctor left, I think a day or two before we got home. They went to New Zealand and they could not come back. And they didn't come back until 2022.
Oh, wow. What a cool place to set up shop for a while.
But they were so strict and really paying attention.
Yes, they were.
Wow. Like, and it's not just them. Lots of people have talked about people that went somewhere and they were stuck there for the duration. So it's mind-bending.
It will define us as a quote unquote generation, right?
Oh yeah.
It'll be our world war in this sense, our Great Depression, something like that, where we will remember life before and recognize how different it is after. But yeah, defining moment. Yeah. It'll never be the same. It's wild.
Oh my God. No, no.
Mm-hmm. Who knows the effects on our mental health? It's hard to fathom, but it's definitely there, right? There was an invisible killer out there for some time. That definitely added to some people's anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Right?
So ripple effect, the effects that it had on our minds, I don't think we'll fully comprehend.
No.
But we're definitely recovering.
Yeah.
We're recovering on so many different levels. That's for sure. And I think sometimes we just brush it under the rug. So that was the pandemic. Here we go. Now we're fine again. I don't think we're so fine.
No. And something that people, I don't know if they didn't think about or didn't talk about, but all the children that were born between March of 2020 and basically today, because there are still people walking around with masks. Now, in China, they've been wearing masks since before SARS, okay? So that's not unusual. But for the rest of the world, there are children here that have never seen an adult smile at
them. Right.
Okay.
That's altering.
Yeah, think about babies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really good with other people's children. I'm terrified I might break them. Always was like that. But you see a child in the store or whatever, you smile at them. They're adorable. You just do that. And that first year through 2020, when we would line up to go to the grocery store, we did the groceries for my dad and my sister because they were both compromised. And you think, oh my God, these poor little critters they just see eyes and masks. Like how is that going to be? And in school, all the kids, our grandkids, my God, They'd go to school on Monday afternoon. They were yanked. They couldn't go back till Thursday. The next week, they were off for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and all these parents had to scramble and try to figure out, how do we try and make a life? Because there were quite a few people that still had to work. It's different in our industries because we're a little more flexible in where we go and what we do. It had to be hard on comedians because you couldn't go to a club.
No, and I my main source of income, my bread and butter, is speaking at conferences and events. And of course, that all came to a grinding halt. And then we had to pivot and do all this virtual stuff. And that was bizarre. And so in my keynotes, I still do a lot of comedy. Like, it's still very lighthearted and lots of comedy involved. And so there I am delivering my material to a webcam.
Yeah.
Anyway, totally bizarre. I'm proud of myself that I did. I pivoted and I'm still quite busy throughout the pandemic. I wrote this whole show called You Gotta Laugh, A Pandemic Pick Me Up.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of truths about what life was like in COVID. Yeah. Everyone had a really good laugh. It was a great stress relief. Very meaningful work back then too. It seems like the harder the stuff, the tougher the stuff, the more meaningful it is to get people laughing. So if it's COVID, that's exciting. I'm glad I'm giving people laughs. If it's a show about mental health, and that can be really tough stuff, and we get laughing, that's really meaningful too. So I say, give me the harder stuff. And
Yeah. Let's do the tough stuff. And
yeah, I must have some sort of, I'm quite drawn to that kind of thing. I don't know, but it certainly does. Like I said, it makes it very meaningful.
It absolutely does. And that's the one thing I think that will come out of COVID, is that those of us, lots and lots of people, are realizing we have to pay a little more attention. Mm-hmm. And we really have to try and be understanding, because people have said forever, everybody's got their own stuff, their own whatever. But now people really get it. Everybody had stuff. You didn't have an option.
Yeah, I do think that will be one of the greatest, one of the greatest elements of the pandemic was the, we'll call it normalization of mental health.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
It started to become part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And I think good things come out of bad things. That's one of my mantras.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's silver lining stuff, but I still believe in it. Adversity always yields a positive result. Yeah. And I think that's going to be one of the good things that comes out of the pandemic.
Oh, absolutely.
It got the conversation. It got it going more so than ever. So,
that is definitely what we need, is more conversation. This has been wonderful. Sorry I put you on the spot to start. I didn't realize until I'd said it how loaded my intro was. I love that. I'm sure comedians love it when you just walk away. Okay, you're a comedian. Be funny.
That's right. Make us laugh.
Yeah. Come on.
What do you mean? I love it. I love it so much.
Love that you took the time to be with me today. I always ask if you can offer our audience some little thing that you use in your life, a little tweak or something you do daily that just helps you get through.
That's a good question. But I guess as a truth teller, I just try to remember the truth about life has just some certain truth to it. And if you can focus on what's real and true, that keeps you out of the stories, the narratives in our minds. So I spoke to it earlier, but I think a big truth is that there's a temporary nature of everything. And I think it's important that the good times are fleeting, and practice gratitude, foster that sense of appreciation. Take time. Notice when it's good. Notice when you're having fun. Savor it like a good meal. But then also to remember that temporary nature of everything applies to adversity as well. Like, the hard times in our lives are not forever. We mend, we rise up, we move forward. We must never doubt our strength or our resilience. I guess that's it. Just remember what's true. You can do hard things. You're very strong. You're resilient. You're that adaptable person who survived a global pandemic. And that one day things will be better. That's just how it works. Things will get better.
Yeah, it is. It's all a cycle. But those are such good points to make, because sometimes we lose sight of the things that are directly in front of us. And rather than concentrating on all the, oh, that happened and that happened, how about what you enjoyed? Look at the things that made you laugh, that made you smile, that you'd like to do again.
Yeah, just savor good and hang on through the tough, because things will change. They always do. Nothing stays the same.
That's perfect ending words for this segment. I look forward to seeing a bit of a rough patch here in Ottawa when it gets here.
So it will come to Ottawa. It will.
Yay. Oh, I definitely can't wait for that. Susan Stewart has been my guest today. Thank you ever so much for joining us. I'm Elaine Lindsay. This is Suicide Zen Forgiveness. And as always, make the very best of your today, every day. And we'll see you next time. Take care.
Thank you for being here for another inspiring episode of Suicide Zen Forgiveness. We appreciate you tuning in. Please subscribe and download on your favorite service and check out SZF's YouTube channel or Facebook community. If you have the chance to leave a 5-star rating or review, it'd be greatly appreciated. Please refer this to a friend you know who may benefit from the hope and inspiration from our guests. Suicide Zen Forgiveness was brought to you by the following sponsors. Trul Social Media, the digital integration specialists. Let them get you rocking page one in the search results. Canada's keynote humorist Judy Kroon, motivational speaker, comedian, author, and stand-up coach at Second City. Judy has been involved for over a decade in the City Street Outreach Program in Toronto. Lisa Sugarman, Boston-based author, columnist, and crisis counselor with the Trevor Project, America's largest suicide and crisis support network for at-risk LGBTQ+ youth, storyteller with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, survivor of suicide loss, and mental health advocate. Lisa's purpose aligns with Elaine's as Lisa shares content and sparks conversations to help end the stigma of suicide and connect people with the support and hope they deserve. Do you have a story to share? Do you know someone you think would be a great guest? Please go to szf42.com. And for our American listeners, that's szf42.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again.